So, getting back to what Dorabha Papa said, all right, he said, in the name of Rav, he says, how do you know that a bris which is performed by a goy is no good? So he said, because it's written, you are to observe my covenant, right? My bris. In other words, you have to do it exactly in accordance with Abraham Avinu was a Jew. So you have to have a Jew in order to do it.
He satisfied himself.
Correct.
Abraham.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rabbi Yochanan, but Rabbi Yochanan maintains Himol Yibo, right? Himol Yibo. In other words, circumcision, I mean, can be performed by anyone. This is the idea, right? But nevertheless, as we'll see, my benaihu. So what is the difference between them? So the answer is RV Mohu, the Gavduni Mohu. If you have an Arab who is already circumcised, or a Gavduni who is already circumcised, Iko benaihu, right? Some kind of a place or other. Gabnun actually really means like hilly or Mount Sinai. We find the Tillim, we find it Har Gabnunim, Har Sinai. That Mount Sinai was Gabnunim, in other words, like a hunchback or something like that. Mm. Okay? So, in other words, the physical appearance of Mount Sinai. Okay? So maybe by Gabdunim over here they mean people who live in the Sinai Desert or something like that. To me that would make sense, okay?
This isn't the Gibeonites.
No, that would be Gibeonim. Yeah, but this is Gabdunim, it's a different word, okay? So at any rate, they are already circumcised, right? So, Manda Oma Himolipo Iko. So, the one who says circumcision is circumcision, then okay, these guys are circumcised. But the man who is Bisi Sishmar Lekka. But the one who says that you have to observe my covenant, my bris, in accordance with Jewish teaching, that's not there. Ulaman Omar Imo Yimo Iko. So now they ask the question, and the one who says circumcised in any way, is it really so that they don't require Jewish circumcision? The Hotnan, didn't we learn as follows? Since first of all, we now come to an expression that I have to explain to you. It's the word konam. Gemara in Dorim uses this expression again and again. Konam means that I take upon myself a vow that I will not do this or that. Particularly, I will not, let's say, do anything whereby I can have enjoyment from this or that or something like that. You could say, for example, koinom olai, let's say, a certain fruit. I'm not going to touch this particular fruit throughout the year. You understand? Or you can say, koinom olai, I don't want to have anything to do with Chaim Shmedrik. Therefore, if I'm Shmedrick's in business, I'm not going to buy from him, I'm not going to talk to him, I'm not going to... This is koinam, okay? Why people would do this, why sachnish, but they do. People can be awfully nasty at times.
Well, isn't it sometimes you want to make a bargain, if only this would happen, I'm going to give this up kind of thing.
And the Gemara and the Dorm, they consider, that sometimes people will use this expression without really meaning it because it's a way of doing business. Yeah, that's correct. That's one of the things. But, a lot of people took it seriously, and then in that case, what do you have to do? If you violate it, then, you are violating your vow, and we learned the connection with vows.
Well, it says
the word kono comes from karbon.
Yes, it's a substitute for the word korban. That's correct.
Doesn't
mean a fine. Well, they use it now. I mean, the modern Hebrew, But the usual word for fine actually is kadas. So, but you know, you can see, I mean, that many words derived from the Torah or from the Chachamim or something like that, but you know, in modern Hebrew, they take on some specific meaning, which is
something that you shouldn't do, is that what it meant?
You're taking upon yourself not to have anything to do with whatever it may be.
Right. In other words, not to do something.
A negative prohibition.
Or whatever. Yeah, it's a negative prohibition.
It's a negative prohibition.
All right. So, this man says, Koinam Shani Ne'er Menarelin. Right? I take upon myself that I'm not going to have any Hano, in other words, any profit, anything, any benefit, whatever, from people who are uncircumcised. In other words, I'll never go into a grocery store or something like that. This is what he had in mind. Okay? You understand what it is? But, Mutab Ali Yisrael, the Yosef Mule Eide Kochodim. So this is interesting. It says, he is permitted, if he makes an oath of this sort, right? He is permitted to have to do with uncircumcised Jews. Come back to that, why are they uncircumcised in the moment? But he's prohibited to have anything to do, no, to have any benefit, whatever, from idolaters who are circumcised. What was his oath? Have nothing to do with uncircumcised.
Right.
Yet, if it's a Jew who's uncircumcised, it's permitted. If it's a guy who is circumcised, then it's not permitted. By terms of the law. Okay. So Alma, so we see, says, Afal Gav Gamehile, even though they are circumcised, the Goyim, right? It's commanded like Mehile Gamehile. It's as if they were not circumcised, right?
True.
All right. Eli, it could be Naihu, but where does the difference come in? It's in the case of Yisrael, Shebesu Echo Machmas Mila, Belomodu. Okay? We have the case of a Jewish child or Jewish man who goes up into Jewish manhood, right? Who was never circumcised for the reason that his mother gave birth to two brothers prior. And in each case, when the brother was circumcised, he died after the circumcision. I mean, today we talk about hemophilia, if you remember. Okay?
Yeah, leaders, yeah.
Right,
leaders.
Right. So, if
you
have two children and each of them died as a result of circumcision, then the next child, the next boy that's born, is not to be circumcised. Even though he is Jewish, but nevertheless he's not circumcised. Okay? Lamanda Omar. So, in accordance with the one who says, Vyato et visi sishmer, ikon, Lamanda memo yimo leka. In other words, there would be a prohibition if you follow the opinion of the one who says that a bris has to be performed according to Jewish teaching. In other words, if the bris has not been performed, then in that case, no good, right? As compared to the one who says himel yimel, in other words, circumcision has taken place, even though in this particular case he was not circumcised. Okay? L'mand oma himel yimel let go. And coming back to that, what done? Didn't we learn that konam shani nehan imulib? If I take a vow that I'm not going to, I take a vow that I am going, I'm not going to have anything to do with people who are circumcised, right? So in that case, he's also be'ala Yisrael. He's prohibited takif from having anything to do with uncircumcised Jews. But he is permitted to have something to do with uncircumcised goyim. Yeah. So Alma. So we see Afal Gav Delo Mehile, command the Mehile. In that case, even though they were not circumcised, it's as if they were circumcised. So we're stuck in a pickle. It could be Nihu. So we come back to a different argument. What is the difference of opinion between them? The answer is Isha. If the bris was performed by a woman. Ramanda Omar, in accordance with the one who says, V'yato is Bisi Sishmor, you are to keep my commandment, Lekon, the Isha Lav Basmilahi. A woman would not be permitted to be a boil because she is not required to be circumcised. We have a principle that who can perform something? And you're yotze with that, you understand? The answer being that someone who is himself required to observe this particular mitzvah. Okay? This is a general, it's a general principle. Okay. Since she is not required to observe it, so that therefore she therefore should not circumcise. But the one who says himo yimo, and we're not talking about specifically who does the circumcision, then what? Iko, then it would be valid for a woman, right? The Isha commanded me here the Dabbe, because a Jewish woman is as if she is circumcised. What he means to say is a Jewish woman, being a Jewish woman, a Bas Yisrael, so she's included in the category of being Jewish. Understand? This is what he said. Getting back to the one who says a woman should not perform the circumcision, right? Don't we find written in the Torah what? Vatikach Tzipora Tzor, right? That Tzipora took a flint stone, right? And she used it, and she cut off the foreskin of
herself.
Of course she was Jewish.
Yeah.
So that's not the question. The question is, whether it's valid, right?
The angel was going to kill Moses.
Right. So, this is what the text, the Torah says.
Right.
She took and she cut off the so and so forth. But, if the person holds the opinion that a woman is invalid, how is he going to do it then? You understand? How is he going to interpret that? So he says, don't mean it vatikach that she took, but mean it like vatakach. She caused somebody to take a flint stone, right? So they say, well, how can you say that? It's written vatikros, which means, and she cut. So he says, Corey made in that case, read it not as vatikros, but vatachres. And she caused somebody else to cut off the foreskin. In other words, what? The Omer Inesh Achvino, she told another person, another man, the Ovad, and he did it at her behest. The Eboy say, well, if you wish, not the possibility. As your Ihivi Ashala, she came and she started the circumcision. They also Moshe Agmara, and then along came Moshe Rabbeinu, and he finished the job. Okay. All right. So, all these arguments are fine.
Is this where they get the law for circumcision from the Buddha's Zohar?
No, this is not the main source.
Where's the main source?
The main source actually is in the Gemara Shabbos.
Shabbos?
Right, because there's a chapter that begins with there is Rabbi Yishmael, because there the question is, what can you do on Shabbos for a bris, and what would be prohibited?
You're allowed to make a bris on Shabbos.
You have to. It's a mitzvah.
On
it's a mitzvah. But the question is, for example, the preparation of the knife that you're going to use, boiling of water, stuff like that, and so on.
What about if you do it on Yom Kippur? You're allowed to drink the wine?
Give it to the baby.
The baby, yeah.
Yeah, touch it to the baby's lips. That's the answer.
Baby's not obligated.
Right.
To be
Yeah, I mean, we do it as part of the naming, actually. If you read that, that's what we name the baby.
The well
after the bris has taken place,
the well doesn't touch the wine at all. Makes the bracha or break off. He has to take the wine.
That's fine. But first of all, they touch it to the lips of the baby. And people say, okay, and then they finish naming the baby, you know, cotton, yigdal, etc., etc. You grow up, you know, Torah, mitzvahs, etc., etc. Okay, so that's what. So the wine has already been used for the mitzvah in that particular case. And then, if you wish, I mean, a minor, a child, would be permitted, you know, to drink the rest of the wine if that's you felt that you didn't want to throw it out or anything like that. You know, it shouldn't be, as we would say, bezoyin, you know, to waste the shame, you know, the mitzvah by doing it. So, what do we do in shul over here for Havdalah? Also, you know, well, I mean, let's say for Kiddush, I'm talking about Friday night Kiddush, okay. Friday night Kiddush, the custom is over here, and in many other shuls, that, you know, you can have an adult making Kiddush, but who drinks the Kiddush?
The
child. A child drinks the Kiddush. Why? Because the adult knows that he has the obligation to make Kiddush at home with the meal, so that this
is
the
making the bracha of making Kiddush, that he is a bracha levatala then.
It's not a bracha levatala if somebody has the use of it, if somebody drinks the wine. So they give it to a child. That's what they do. Interesting. Yeah.
And then they can make the same bracha at home?
Yes. Yes.
And partake
right.
themselves.
Sure. Right. Well, let's say, for example, Anne stays home, right? I make Kiddush over here in shul for myself, but when I come home, I have to make Kiddush for her. So it's not a bracha levatala. In one case, I want to make Kiddush for myself so that I can enjoy a little shlapsi before going home. In the other case, you know, I still have to make it when I get home because she hasn't heard Kiddush. I have to make it for her. Okay.
So she drinks the wine.
Right. So do I. Whatever. Okay, we have reached a new Mishnah, so I think I'll stop at this particular point and continue from here next week. Yashikar to all of you for coming out in spite of the... All right, tonight is the 19th already.
Yeah.
Right, 19th of January in the year 2005. We are continuing now with the Mishnah at the bottom of page Chof Zion, Amit Aleph, in other words, Avodah Zorah 27a. Little reminder, as we heard in our little review, that the last subject that we were discussing was the business about circumcision, about Bris Milah. Could it be done, for example, by a non-Jew in a place where there is no Jewish expert male who's available? And then the last issue was, could a woman perform it? And therefore we call to mind the business about Zipporah, and as we see, some, trying to find excuses to say, well, Zipporah didn't do the actual job, but somebody else did the actual job. So,
there are in Boston now women who advertise. Through the conservative movement.
That is conservative, correct.
Women are not allowed to do
it. What is the problem? The problem, as we learned, is that if a person is under the obligation to perform a mitzvah, then he can enable others to fulfill the mitzvah. But if a person is not personally required to fulfill the mitzvah, then he cannot be mitzvah, others, right. Okay, so since a woman cannot be circumcised, so therefore that would be the basic reason why then she cannot circumcise others. So the business of Zipporah was brought in, I mean, to show, you know, that the Bible, there is a precedent for it, but nevertheless, they tried to explain it away. Pros and portion.
Well, yeah, they said that Moses really believed it, but she started.
Well, that's
well, that was one business, and well, the other one says that she simply asked somebody else to do the job.
Right. How do you get this? Where he, I don't want to go into the very details, but she says, you're a bridegroom of blood to me.
Yes,
how
yes,
do you get
yes.
the idea that he completed the mystery?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, according to the Agada, if you remember, a serpent started to swallow Moshe Rabbeinu and got as far as, you know, his his genitals, shall we say, okay? So on the basis of that, Zipporah understood that the reason why this was happening to Moshe Rabbeinu was because they had not circumcised their son. And so she acted immediately. I mean,
how old was the son supposed to have been at the time? Do we know?
Presumably he was a week old.
Oh, he was just a week old.
Right. Okay. It was. Well, we presume
like,
so.
Yeah.
Oh, right. I mean, they don't. But the idea being, she had another son afterwards. But this was with the first son. Obviously, the second son was circumcised without
that
any
was
problems.
Menasseh,
right. Right.
No, that's no. His Gershom was the first by Eliezer.
Yep.
Eliezer. Yeah.
And who are the children? Why? What are the names?
Menashe, Ephraim, and Joseph.
Oh, that's Joseph. Joseph.
Right. Yeah. All right. So the new Mishnah begins sort of to continue. Since we already have been talking about Brit Milah, can a pagan do it? Because remember, this is essentially, in those days, it was the pagans that they were concerned. Okay?
Right.
So now the discussion is, in general, can you call upon a goyish doctor to heal you? Of course, if I were Archie Bunker, I would say that, you know, remember Archie Bunker? He was an anti-Semite, but nevertheless, right.
Doctor.
He wanted a Jewish doctor.
Right.
So this mission reminds me of Archie
Bunker. High caliph who wanted Maimonides.
Yes, yes.
They knew how the right stuff was.
Of course, bear in mind, too, again, we're talking about idolaters, the pagans of those days, who also, they didn't consider it a terrible thing if they killed a Jew in the process.
Yeah.
Okay? Because of their hatred towards the Jews. So we have to bear that in mind, too, in connection with this. In other words, would the same thing apply to a goyish doctor today? The answer is no. Because we have faith, I mean, first of all, that they treat people of all races. People have a chance to see, you know, them in practice, how they're doing, and we know also that any house of healing, whether it's a Mount Sinai or whether it's a mercy hospital, but essentially they're there in order to cure the sick, and whether we have a goyish doctor or a Jewish doctor, you know.
I was once scheduled for surgery when Rabbi Lamb was here.
Yeah.
And it was looking ahead, the doctor that I had was the Mercy Hospital.
Yeah.
So I took a consultation with Rabbi
Lamb. Yeah.
Would it be all right for me to go to Mercy Hospital? I was very uneasy.
Yeah.
Well, how did I know? I mean, it was a new experience.
Back
the, the first surgery, it was David was 2 years old. Being scheduled for surgery. As it turned out, it didn't happen. I didn't go there. I went for some other reason. But Rabbi Lamb was very clear about saying that not only should you go there, but you'll probably get better care. The nuns, he says, the sisters are very good. So he was very encouraging.
Yeah.
About
I've used almost exclusively Mercy Hospital for my operations.
I was on that.
Right.
But I mean, the whole idea of going there, it was weird for me. I felt very strange about going there.
Yeah, well, so
it was happening a long time ago.
You know the old story.
No,
the old story is about the Jewish kid who was a wild kid. They put him into a Catholic school.
he's going to hang on the wall.
Hanging on the wall there.
Right.
No, I didn't hear this story. I guess it's an old, and this probably goes in the line with it, send you another rabbi.
No. the story is since it was a wild Jewish kid, so the parents decided the only way to take him is to send him to a Catholic school because, you know, there they have discipline. So Taki becomes very quiet and docile and everything is well behaved. So how comes such a change, he says? Because I saw what they did to that Jew on the wall up there.
All right, this, I could use that. Collect obbies. Collect obbies.
Okay. So the Mishnah begins by saying, Miss Rafi, in the hand, Ripui. Excuse me, yeah, my eyes keep running up and down and so on. All right. Misrafihen, Ripui, Mormon. About low Ripui, Nefoshes. All right. Very puzzling statement. I mean, because if you take it literally, it says you can get medical help from them in an area which concerns something for which you have to pay money, but not when it's a question of the soul itself.
Right,
so Rashi immediately comments, he says, we better take a look at the Gemara as to what they were talking about. So we will come to that in another moment, okay?
Right.
So that's as far as the doctor is concerned. As I say, we'll come back to that. And then the next part of the Mishnah says, we aim to stop in my hand, the whole walk aim to be Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Meir says, you're not allowed to have a goyish barber take of you, no matter where it may be, according to the opinion of Rabbi Meir.
Barber,
I'll come back to that in a second. Yes.
The
Chacham and Maimrin, but the sages say, Bereshus HaRabim Mutor Avolo Beinu Leveno. Okay, which means this. If the barber sets up, as in those days, I mean, they didn't have barber shops. So what did they do? Barber would set up a chair, okay? He had his implements, you know, in a box or something like that. So he sat down in the chair, and then he proceeded, you know, to perform whatever he had to do, a haircut, a shave, a face mask. But of course, don't forget, a shave from a Jewish point of view is prohibited, except under certain circumstances, okay? But as far as the haircut is concerned, okay, God's fine. But where? In the street, where people are going by and so on. So what Chachamim is saying to Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Meir says, nowhere, don't go to a goyish barber in any case, okay? So the Chachamim say, if it's in the street itself, where people are going by, they can see what's going on and so forth, then you can do it. But if the two of you are alone somewhere where people are not seeing you, then in that case it's prohibited. Now, of course, what is the reason why they don't want you to go to a pagan doctor? So the answer is very simple. Because what did the barber use? Did he use scissors? He didn't. Primarily, he used a straight razor. Okay? And therefore, the fear was that the barber would take the razor and go like that.
Okay,
right.
In America, when our immigrant parents, grandparents came, the barbers were surgeons and they were doing medical things.
The Alter Heim, and I still used to see it in the Bronx, I remember, that you would go by a barbershop, mm-hmm. if it was a Jewish barbershop, and there was a sign in the window which says, Wilstellen Bankers.
My grandfather
never
witnessed it.
You never heard of Bankers.
The barbershop, I saw it being done to my grandfather when I was a little girl.
They put a heap glass.
They
put a flame inside of the glass and put it on his back. My grandfather used to get
Chest pleurisy.
Correct.
For congestion of the chest of some sort. The other thing was the mustard plaster. If mustard plaster didn't work, they went for the bankers.
Right.
My grandmother used to iron.
What was the mustard plaster?
You don't know about the mustard plaster on the chest?
It heats you up.
It's like a hot water
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Mustard thing on it.
Why did they call it mustard? That's
it was mustard powder.
Oh, see, I never knew that. Sure. See, I was familiar with these sort of heating pans. They put mustard powder on it.
Yeah. And they put like a.
Okay, you guys are saying why? What was the purpose of the mustard?
Yeah, they're heat. They're created heat.
It wasn't, you didn't have hot water inside like a plastic thing or something?
No, they did wet it. They wet it with the mustard. They made this solution on the floor.
Even today, they feature now different kinds of bandages that you put on that's supposed to.
And it was in the cloth. You know.
Wait, the mustard gave it heat?
Yes. The mustard provided heat. Yeah. So you covered it over, and you took it off, and the chest would be red. Uh-huh. That's how hot it got. The mustard, it was a natural way of doing it.
Well, I came to Springfield.
I lived with my grandparents.
I needed a doctor, a foot doctor or something. About that. Anyway, Dr. Eisenstein sent me to a Dr. Derby, old man, who was still practicing, had an office here on Maple Street. So, at any rate, he prescribed something called phlogiston.
Phlogiston? That I never heard of.
It's a salve of some kind. I mean, that was supposed to make the feet feel better. So I went into the drugstore and I said, I need a jar of phlogiston. Oh, you must be a patient of Dr. Derby.
The last of the
old. Right. Oh, yeah. But that was old fashioned medicine, right?
Yeah. My grandmother also used to iron my grandfather's back. She had a hot iron, the iron.
Yeah, the flat iron that they used.
Flat iron, the iron. She used to heat up on the gas stove, and she put flannel on his back, and then she would iron over the flannel. Again, she took
that
iron.
I didn't hear of. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's a heating pad.
Heat treatment. No question about it.
My grandfather must have been susceptible to this kind of thing, because I witnessed these things.
Right. Okay. That's true. Anyway, to get back to our text, the mother wants to know, says, my ripui mamon, or my ripui in the foshes, says, what do we mean by ripui mamon? In other words, literally healing with money and healing of souls. So he says, ilemo, if you say that the meaning is as follows, Ripui momon bischar, in other words, ripui momon means that you have to pay the doctor for the care, so that would be all right, right? Whereas ripui nefosh, that would mean bechinam, he's giving you free service, and that's not good. Why not good? Because
Rashi
says, Ripui Nefosh is Bechidim, he says. Kolomar, he says, Me Atzmo. On his own, he's curing you. And Menafsha Hu Oisa. And he's doing it by his own soul, literally. In other words, he wants to do it. Okay? But the point is that don't look for a favor from him.
Yeah.
Okay, don't look for a favor. So, is that what we mean by that? One means that they pay, and the other means that he does you a favor and doesn't charge you anything for it. So they say, well, wait a minute, if this is what the meaning is, then he says, listen, let us learn the teaching as follows. This rapim mayhem is har, you're allowed to get healing from them by paying for it, right? But don't do it for... for no pay, right? Right.
For
nothing. Right. So maybe that's not what the meaning is, they say. So they have another suggested meaning. It says, Elo Ripui Momon means as follows. It means that if you have a drink, which is Dover Sheimbo Sakona,
right?
Where there's no danger that's involved in it, okay, then in that particular case, you are permitted, to to seek medical help from them, because obviously they're not out to kill you, but they want to get paid for their services. Okay, so you can take such a chance, right? Whereas Ripu in the fourth choice, Dova Shiyesh Besakona. If there is danger, however, that's involved in that particular case, we would say that don't go to a pagan doctor, because he can never take a chance as to what he's going to do to you. There are doctors who have a reputation for not being the greatest healers in the world, right? So if life is in danger, then don't go to that. This is another interpretation.
You're now defining
repeating the forces of repeating the moment.
One where there's a minor illness and one where there's a grave illness.
Correct.
Okay, that's very different.
Okay, Omar, so now they raise an objection to it. They say to Omar, Rav Yehuda, did Rav Yehuda say as follows? Afilu ribdo de kasilta loy mesnesa minayim. Even all that it has to do is, let's say, to lance a boil or something like that, just make a pinprick in you, even then you shouldn't go to him. Now that would contradict the fact what we said, that there's no possibility of danger that you could go to him. And according to Rav Yehuda, he says no, don't even go in that case. So they come up with an alternative suggestion. Maybe the meaning is as follows: Elo ripu imonon behemta. Maybe ripu imonon means your money, literally. In other words, your animal is sick, so you can call in a goy veterinarian, right, to take care of it. Okay. Ripu in the foshes, however, that's goofy. Where you personally are ill, then in that case, don't go to a pagan doctor. Okay, and yes, I just want to finish one sentence. Okay, the Omar, and this is then the reason why Rav Chisda said, right? Then what did he say? He said that afilu rivda de kasilta lemas nisiminayim, that even for a pinprick you don't go to them, because this has to do with you personally and you don't want to expose yourself. Okay. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, to me, I would have had, if I had just read that without the explanation, I would have thought nefesh had to do with something that's on your heart, like a psychological kind of problem. You could go to them for physical things, but don't go to them for
psychology. Psychiatry.
Yeah, but they might have a chance to influence your thinking or something.
Well, that's a problem today, there's no question. I mean, because you find, doctors who are very secularist from their point of view, and they poo-poo anything that has to do with traditional Yiddishkeit. Now, if a person has grown up as a traditional Jew, and he goes to one of them, it could be that such a psychiatrist or a clinical psychologist or whatever, would ruin their outlook altogether instead of helping them. So that therefore now we have a generation of psychologists who actually, many of them have smicha, or if they're women, they've gone to yeshivas and things like that, and they have a much more favorable a relationship with Orthodox people who need psychiatric help or have problems, whatever it might be. All you have to do is to read the Jewish press. I mean the magazine. I'm going to slip in my copies so that anybody who wants to read it is welcome to it. Every week there are Jewish psychologists who discuss problems and so on. It's interesting to read. It's a weekly that's published every week. Right, the Jewish press.
Yeah,
All right, so.
When I think of soul, I go along more with the idea that it's life-threatening.
Yeah, life-threatening. Yeah, I mean, this is the sense really in which they want you to take it. This is correct. Right. Okay, so Amar Rav Kisa before Rav Kisa said the Amar Rav Kisa says Avol. However, Im Amar Lo Samploni Yofel Lo Samploni Ra Lo Mutar. If a goyish doctor tells you this medication will be good for you, but this medication will not be good for you, then in that case, you can rely upon his word. Why? So, according to Rashi, what is involved over here is the fact that, let's turn the page, okay. He says, Sovar, because the doctor will be of the following opinion, Shiyuli Mashiloi, Yehechadi Mashiloi, Mashiloi in the Shachrina, which means as follows. He's asking me right now, right? And just as he's asking me for my opinion, he'll go to another doctor and ask his opinion as well. And therefore, if the other doctor, says, no, he gave you the wrong advice or something like that, it'll be a reflection upon my experience as a doctor. So under those circumstances, you can ask him, because you can always get a second opinion from somebody else as to whether the medication is good for you or it's not good for you. It's interesting in Sanami that the word sam in Hebrew, it means drugs today, correct? Right? And of course, I mean, every day, what we say, kachocho, samim, etc., etc., right? In other words, the various ingredients that went into the making of the katoris, the incense. So that's also sabin, or sabamonim in another Gemara. So this word, right? In Yiddish, Yiddish means always poison, right? But not in the original, right? But because something could be isab chayim, could be a medication which will be good for your life, right? And the opposite, of course, is sab mavis, okay? Medication that leads to death, okay? So in Yiddish, it simply became poison, okay.
And this something could be spices or perfume.
That's so correct. That is absolutely right. Yeah. Right.
Different.
Right.
Super strength of something. Really, yeah. Yeah,
when David first started working, he worked first in the Israeli, something or other in New York. I think it was operated by the War Office or something. Purchasing.
Oh, like the defense mission.
Defense mission, right. Yeah. So he worked over there first before he made Aliyah to Israel.
Right.
So he said, you know what the women in the office over there are all talking about? Bossa. In other words, this one wants Chanel number 5 and this one wants something else. This is Bossa. Okay. Yeah, so he says, you know, if he has another opinion, right, from another doctor, the Yosahu Gavra, and that person will come, the ruin Lapshe, and he'll ruin my reputation. If I give advice which is not good, so that therefore he's going to be very careful in what kind of advice he's going to give to him. All right. Omar Rava, Rava said as follows. Omar Rav Yochanan, named Rav Yochanan, he says, V'yamilo Omar Rav Chis, Omar Rav Yochanan. Some say not that it was Rava who said it, or Rabba, as the marginal note says over there, but it was Rav Chis who said the name of Rav Yochanan. At any rate, what did Rav Yochanan have to say? He says, Sofek Chai, Sofek Meis, Eim is Rav in Mehen, Vadai Meis, Misrapin Mayhem. Okay. So, the question is, according to Rav Yochanan, who apparently didn't care for Goyish doctors, all right? So he says, if it's a question whether the person will live or will die as a result of the medical treatment that he gets, don't go to a pagan doctor. But if the person definitely is dying, then in that particular case, you can go to a pagan doctor. Why? Because he says, mace, right? He's going to be dying, right? So now they ask a question, wait a minute, he's dying, all right. But he says, ha'ikar ha'isha, isn't there a possibility that he might live just a little bit longer? This is what we mean by ha'isha over here. Literally means life for an hour. But what it means is he'll live a little bit longer. So in that case, we shouldn't go to him, right? So he says, the ha'isha lo ha'ishina. We are not concerned about just the, you know, the possibility of a short span of life a little further.
Oh, I see. The higher answer as opposed
right.
to higher Shah, it's really higher Shana. Shinan would be for a year.
Shana is a year, but it's not Shana. It's Shah. Higher Shah.
No, but this is low high Shinan.
Low high Shinan, right.
No,
not concerned,
high,
right.
No.
It's Hayashinan.
You can't read it as Hayashinan. It's not the same.
I see what you're saying, yeah.
That's what I'm trying
to No, I mean, you have to go by the language. The concept of Hayashor is contradicted in other areas. I mean, that even the Hayashor is considered important, even to live a little bit longer.
Right.
This is the basis upon which, for example, you know, that they don't want you to, let's say, to stop...
Disconnect the wire,
exactly. Because whatever life they have is precious. So, but you're going to find differences of opinion in the Gemara because, you know, different sages have different outlooks upon these things. So you can't help that. Okay. So since... the last statement was that Chayashor Le Chayashinan, that we're not concerned. The word Chayashinan, as I said, means we are concerned. Okay?
Oh, I didn't realize
so,
that.
So, Lo Chayashin means we're not concerned.
Okay?
Okay? Menor Tamer, and on what basis do you say that the Chayashor Le Chayashinan? What basis do you say that we're not concerned about, you know, just a little bit longer life? Dichsiv, so they bring in an incident that occurs in the Book of Kings where it's written that there were four lepers who decided there's no point in staying in Shomron, the capital of Israel, because there was a terrible famine that had been besieged by the enemy, by the Syrian army, Aram, and there was nothing, no food, neither for a man nor for beast or something like that. So he said, look, we might just as well go to the camp of the Aram. If they kill us, they'll kill us, right? As they said, for example, if we say, right, that will go into the city, because don't forget that they were lepers. Where did the leper have to stay? Had to be Husamachne, so they're outside the city, okay? So, if we say, let's go into the city, but the Horov Bo'ir Master Shom, there's famine in the city and we'll die over there. So, therefore, as I said, you know, where did they decide to go? They decided to go to the camp of Aram, and that's what happened. When they went over there, they discovered that something had happened, that the army had fled and left behind all kinds of food and booty and things like that and so on. And then they came back to the people of Samaria, and at first they were not believed. But then, boy, everybody rushed out, you know, in order to try to get something.
The king sent
right.
a few horsemen to investigate.
He sent a few horsemen to investigate.
Then they all rushed out. They trampled the camp.
Oh, he made a prediction that they would pay money and trample it.
Not money will be paid, no.
Right.
But the person who said, you know, what kind of Mishagoyim are you? Think we're going to believe your story, Boba Mice and so on.
Right.
He was trampled by the mob that was rushing out.
Right,
right.
Right.
Yeah.
Guy that the man that didn't believe, you mean?
Yeah, it didn't leave.
Right. So I think it was Elisha said.
Yeah, so the days of Elisha, correct, right.
You have like a cella will be the
Right, exactly.
A shekel.
That, right, the food, you know, that was so scarce and that you're paying the highest amount of money in order to get it, that tomorrow all of a sudden it's going to be, you know, cheapest.
And then
I wouldn't say cheap as borscht, but yeah, borscht costs money.
And then the captain said, if you believe that there's like, I'm trying to think of there's a word for small window in Hebrew. It's like.
Hinei Hashem asa aruba es b'shamayim. That's the exact quotation. Hinei Hashem osa aruba es b'shamayim. God will make arubas, make a little peepholes in the sky.
Right, and so.
Right.
So he was right. He didn't get so that. We should say he won't see it.
So they say, nevertheless, they could have lived a little bit longer, right? So we have to say, but it shows us that they were not concerned about prolonging their life a little bit, because they said, we'll die here, we'll die over there. That's all. Meisbe, Kasha is asked on it. It says, Lo yisor v'yitein odom im aminim v'yemes rabin mehem. Which means that a person should have nothing to do with the minim. Now remember, the minim here are not idolaters. Minim are the people who deny the Jewish faith, heretics, and so on. It says, don't have anything to do with them. Yisavayutein means literally don't do any business with them or have conversations with them or anything like that. Don't do it. And the aim is rabavehem. Don't go to their doctors, even afilu chayisho, even if it is only to prolong life for a moment. And they quote a story now. Masa ben Doma ben Achosin shel Rabbi Yishmael. Story is told about Ben Doma, who was the son of Rabbi Yishmael's sister. Okay, Shehikisho Nochash. He was stung by a snake. Avoy Yaakov ish Kfar Sachanya l'Rab Pesach. And Yaakov, who came from Kfar Sachanya, we already met him before when he challenged the rabbis with the quotation. So he came to heal him. Apparently, he knew something about how to heal people, right? V'lo hanicha Rabbi Yishmael, but Rabbi Yishmael did not permit him to do so. The Yomale Rabbi Yishmael, Achi Hanachlo, and he said, Rabbi Yishmael, my brother, let him do it. The Erafei, the sick person, Ben Dobet said, okay? He said, Rabbi Yishmael, Achi, even though actually he was, he was the nephew, okay? It's the nephew, but he called him Ochi, my brother. Okay? Says, let him do it. Let him do what he has to do, Ve'irafei, and I will be healed, b'meno, right, by him. But ni ovi mikro v'natoiro shehu mutar. And not only that, but I will quote you a pasuk from the Torah that it is permitted for him to heal me. V'lo hispik likmos hadavor achi asasodesh mosav ha'meis. But he didn't have time enough to finish what he was saying when his soul departed and he died. Okay?
Meisbe
means that you ask a kasha on something. You ask you find a contradictory statement. Okay? Or you ask concerning that it's not in line with what you're saying previously. Okay? Right. Yeah. No, that's all right. We have to understand the language of the Talmud, you know.
Right. Connective phrases.
Yes. You know, that takes time really to absorb, you know, the language of the Talmud, you know, and their the expressions that they use in order to develop an inyan, you know. So, okay. So, he passed away, right? But David passed away. Korah lo Rabbi Yishmael. So Rabbi Yishmael said concerning him, of course, it means probably that Rabbi Yishmael gave the hesped for his nephew. And he said, Ashrecha ben Doma, fortunate are you, ben Doma, shegufcha tahor, your body is pure. In other words, you did not, you didn't sin, right? And likewise, your soul departed in purity by not having been contaminated by whom?
By
Yaakov Shkosanza, right, the Nin, right, the heretic, right. But lo avarto divrei chavirecha, right, and nor did you transgress the words of your, fellow scholars, shahoy omrim, who said, and they quote a pasuk from Koheles, which says, "Aforetz gader yishchenu nachash." That if somebody breaks down a fence, then a snake will come and bite him. Of course, we usually use that expression to mean, "Don't depart from the minhag," because if you depart from the minhag, then in that particular case, there could be dire consequences resulting from it. Or it's going to, you break the fence. In other words, you break the fence that protects.
Yeah.
Right. So in that case, the snake will come and bite you, which means that there will be dire consequences as a result. So the question is, why in the one case they said you can go to a pagan doctor? Do you understand? When, it's very life-threatening or something like that, although we've had contradictory statements too, but, I'm trying to develop the idea as it's presented at this moment, okay? But you couldn't go to Yaakov Ishkosechanya. Why not to him? So the answer is Shani Minutz, it says, because heresy is different from paganism. In what way? The Moshka. Because it is attractive to others, and therefore we don't want to have anything to do with a heretic, because you might be tempted into following his heresy.
But how did they derive that from somebody that was in a life-threatening situation that was going to be treated basically for snake bite?
Right.
Well, what difference did it make that he be treated by a heretic?
Okay.
I mean,
we would say, as far as from our point of view today, excuse me, my point of view today would be considered very extreme. There's no question about that, right? But in those days, they were afraid, first of all, of what a pagan doctor might do. As we saw, they were afraid that he might kill a person rather than heal a person. And in the case of Min, didn't say that he's going to kill him. That the doctor would kill the patient, but they were very much afraid that he'd get into a discussion and, create Jews for you-know-who. Something like that, because these are the minim of today. I mean, all these Judeo-Christian, I don't mean, we get together but I'm talking about, Jews for Jesus, and they have other guys. Unfortunately, they've attracted souls. A lot of young Jewish people have been lost because they didn't know what traditional Yiddishkeit was like. They grew up without anything, and so they found this attractive. Just as others go into Hare Krishna and to Zen Buddhism and God knows what else. Right. So that does represent, a problem. If they're out missionizing, then you have to stay away from them. You see, that's the idea. So he name Chivya Tarke. Tarke was, bitten by a snake. But they say Chivya the Rabbonin to Leslie Asusa Klal. what kind of a snake are we talking about? The snake in the pasuk that says "Ishchedu nafsho," should not be bitten by a snake. They didn't mean it necessarily literally, that a snake is going to come and bite you. But what they meant is that you'll be bitten by virtue of the fact that you have violated those teachings that the rabbis have taught us, and for such a thing there is no healing whatever. Alright, so now we go back again. Remember he had said that I can quote you a pasuk which shows that the doctor should be permitted to heal me, right? So the question is, which pasuk is it? So it says, my havalei leba, what should he have said? So he said, he should have said as follows. Torah says, v'chai bohem. All right, this we find, these two famous words, we find it in Sefer Vayikra, Parsha Achrei Mos, where it says, you know, that you should do, observe my mitzvahs, asher yasa osam ho'adam, mitzvahs which a person should do, v'chai bohem, and live by them, right? And they add, v'lo sheyomus bohem, right? And not that they should die by them. In other words, to save a life is more important. I mean, the mitzvahs are given for us to live, not to die by. Okay. But nevertheless, there are times when a person has to be prepared for, has to be prepared to sacrifice his life. So this is what they now discuss for a moment. Okay? So, Rabbi Yishmael, why did Rabbi Yishmael refuse? So they say, his interpretation is that where can you violate a mitzvah in order to live? That's how he's expressing Rachai Bahem, right? For lo yamus bahem. You can do that bitzina, where it is in privacy. Avol v'fahesya, but if you are in public, meaning in the presence of 10 fellow Jews who see what you're doing, right? That in that particular case, lo, then you can't. This is based upon the concept that we find also in Sefer Vayikra. It's written, the lo yechalel eshem kodshi, you should not profane my holy name, right? V'nikdashti b'sof b'nei Yisrael, so that I can be sanctified, I can be declared kodosh, right, in the eyes of the congregation, the people of Israel, which means as follows. We have what we call something Chilul Hashem. Chilul Hashem means that you profane God's name by doing something, particularly, I mean, it's Chilul Hashem to do it in public, in the private, but in public it's even worse because you give people the wrong idea. Okay? Look, a Jew who gets the publicity that he swindles a lot of money, I don't have to tell you, it's not good. Because, they accuse all Jews, of being swindlers and so on and so forth. So, if it's in public, then in that particular case, no. So that's why he denied it to him. The Tanya, as we've learned, Hoya Rabbi Yishmael Oiber. Rabbi Yishmael would say, Minayin Sheim Aimim Leili Odom, Avod Avodis Kechovim, V'yal Teoreg. If they tell a person, worship an idol and you will not be killed. So according to Rabbi Yishmael's opinion over here, Sheyavod V'yayehorei, then let him worship the idol and not be killed. Talmud Lomar, how do we know? Rabbi Yishmael is saying this. So Talmud Lomar it's based upon the fact that he interprets this from the Pasuk, V'chai b'hem, right? That he's to live by this mitzvah, V'lo yishayomis b'hem. Okay. Then it continues, however, and it says, Yochol, afil b'fahesyo. Does this also include if he's asked to serve Avodah Zorah in public? So the answer is, Talmud Levin, that's why the Pasuk says, "V'lo sechalalu eshem kodshi," you should not profane my holy name. So this is the reason, in other words, why a person should choose rather martyrdom than to serve Avodah Zorah. There are considered three cardinal sins in Judaism. Okay? What are the three cardinal sins? One of them, of course, is Avodah Zorah. Yeah, whatever you want to call it, correct. Murder is the next one, which Shvichasdomim is the expression I usually use.
Right.
Shvichasdomim. And the other one is Arroyos. In other words, not to have immoral sexual relations, which is also considered a primary, a cardinal sin. Okay?
Yeah.
Right. They did it to save their lives, right. So
you
can find some justification for it. I mean, because we say if we had been alive at that time, how would we have reacted? Would we try to save our own skin, or would we do what, for example, let's say Don Yitzhak Abarbanel did? He left Spain together with several hundred thousand Jews. That they left everything behind, their vineyards, their homes, their whatever bank accounts they had, and so all that that they gave up in order to get out of Spain and not be forced to accept Christianity.
And they were lucky to get out alive.
Yes, but many of them,
they went to places.
There was those who went to Portugal a few years after Spain had the unit, so they also did the same thing, right? They had to find someplace else in order to go to. So from Portugal, some of them eventually wound up in Holland. Once that they were in Holland, and others left Portugal. They went to South America.
That didn't work out either. South America.
No,
it did for a little while.
For a while. The Dutch were right. Curacao, for example.
Right.
The Dutch.
And yet,
so,
the history of New York is that the Dutch were not.
They correct.
When they came into New York,
Jews had one.
Well, one didn't want. I mean, Stuyvesant.
Stuyvesant was not
the
submit
Dutch,
to give up.
The merchants in Holland who controlled.
Yeah.
The Dutch West India Company, right, they had Jewish shareholders too, so they were the ones who compelled Stuyvesant to permit Jews to stay.
The Dutch at one point had a foothold in what's now Brazil.
Yes.
Receipt.
Correct.
The Jews went there for Portugal.
Yeah.
Then the Portuguese came, who was always there, but they came to receive. And then it was very bad for the Jews. So that particular group then went to New York, where they came to the unwelcoming arms of Peter Stuyvesant.
Others went back to Holland. But, in some of the other Caribbean areas, there were also the Jewish settlements. Right.
So what we learned from this is that this is Rav Shmuel. The saying actually... I'm not sure I got this.
He says,
in private you could...
It would be permitted, according to him.
Wow.
But not in public, because of the question, of Chilul Hashem public, which is considered worse than Chilul Hashem private.
Look at the things he study and write.
That's quite an opinion.
Shabbat, about things that you can do to, violate Shabbat, but it's in the context of somebody's personal home for a sick person.
Right.
Sure. Right.
It's not,
Correct. But in that particular case, it would even, you could probably even do it publicly too, because people are aware of the fact that in order to save the life, you are permitted to violate. But it's true, the normal rule would be something which is done, you know, more privately than publicly. Okay, I think we'll stop at this particular point. Okay, tonight is the 2nd of February in the year 2005. We are continuing now in the Gemara of Eda Zora, Daf Chav Zayin Omid Beis, in other words, 27B. And I just wanted 27B, right. And I just want to remind you what we were talking about at the last time. Were really different items that were discussed. But the thing that started the whole discussion that we were dealing with right now is the question of whether a Jew can be healed by an idolater who is a physician. And there are pros and cons. First of all, what was the basic objection? Basic objection was that they were afraid that the doctor might kill the patient, and because of the lack of love, you know, for a Jew. So therefore, they urged that you not be healed by an idolater who was a physician, but go for a Jewish doctor all the time. Okay, that's point number one. Point number two, however, they said that if this doctor happens to be a mubchala rabbim, in other words, he is a specialist recognized by everybody, then in that particular case, you might go to him simply because he's not going to ruin his reputation by trying to kill his patients, okay? So, as we see, there are already pros and cons. Then they gave a story that we had about if we recall, it was a story about Doma Ben, who was the nephew of Rabbi Yishmael. He was bitten by a snake, and then there was a min, in other words, a sectarian, probably a Christian doctor, who wanted to cure him. So, what was the objection, to him?
The
right.
Father didn't let the son when the daughter was
yeah, yeah
the
right, okay. So,
is that the one we're talking about?
He was bitten by the snake, right? The Rabbi Yishmael, who was his uncle, wasn't his father, his uncle. His uncle wouldn't let him go to him.
And he died, didn't he?
And he died. And he said, Ashrecha, fortunate are you that you died, that your neshama is pure and everything else, and So the question is, so Nutsataka, why not a min? So the answer is, as we come across it, that they were very much afraid that minus, in other words, let's say Christianity, they were missionizing, and that they would try to use this opportunity in order to convert, so to speak, the person who was their patient, because they presented it in a very attractive way. So, but they said, he could have saved his life by quoting another pasuk. A person is in mortal danger, then the Torah says that v'chai b'hem. In other words, that the mitzvahs are given to us that we should live by them and not to die by them. And as a matter of fact, even Rabbi Yishmael said that under certain circumstances, a person may bow down, let's say, may observe to Avodah Zarah. But under what circumstance? Only if his life is threatened by one person and there's nobody around. But if it is public, this is what we'll start with right now. Rabbi Yishmael Hani Mila Besida. Okay, this would be okay, about 7 lines from the bottom. Since the Torah says, right, V'chai b'hem, V'lo she'yobos b'hem. In other words, you are to live by the commandments of God, and you should not die by them. And Rabbi Yishmael, so he says, Hani Mila, according to him, this would apply Betzina in privacy, Abol b'fahes yolo, but not in public. In public, if you're asked to violate something, then in that particular case, you have to be willing to undergo what we call, Kiddush Hashem. In other words, the sanctification of God. In other words, you have to be ready to be a martyr if necessary, and not to profane the name of God in public, because it's written, V'lo sechalalu Hashem kodshi. Torah says, you shall not profane my holy name, but nigdashti besok b'nei Israel, because I am to be sanctified in the midst of the people of Israel, and so that therefore if there are Jews around, you know, to see what you're doing, you have to set them an example that they refuse to observe, to bow down to Avodah Zarah, even if it means that they're ready to kill you. Right, if they say to a person, worship Avodah Zarah and you will not be killed, sheyaved, he says, v'lal yehareg, he should worship and not be afraid. But nevertheless, as we said before, there's a difference between doing it between Betzina and between doing it before Hesiam. Right? Talmud Levin, Chai Bahem, Lo Shiyamus Bahem. So it says, Yochal Afil Bahasya, shall we say, even in public, so Talmud Levin, Lo Sechal Lo Shem Kodshi. You are not allowed to profane my holy name. So this is what we concluded with last time. All right. So now, we come to a different problem. The problem is, in general, what kind of medical help can we have on Shabbos? When can we use it, and when can we not use it? Here they're not even talking at the moment about whether the doctor is a goy or a min or whatever it may be, but we're talking in general. So this is our second line from the bottom. Omar Rabbi Yochanan said, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, he said Rabbi Yochanan's name. He says, Kol Makos Shabbachalo Lidodes HaShabbos Ein Mis Rabbi Mehem. So he says the following. He says, if you have a certain maka in this case means a wound, a disease, or something like that, where it is permitted to profane Shabbos, to be mechalal Shabbos, in order to save this person's life, don't go to that kind of a doctor. In other words, to a goyish doctor. Okay? The Iko the Abre, and there are those who say, Omer Rabbi Bachona, Omer Rabbi Yochana, and he says, Kol Bako. Oh, this is the next page. So he says, Kol Makos Shechalal Ein Misratim Mehem, meaning that if it is an internal maka, don't go to a goyish doctor. Again, for why? For what reason? The same reason. In other words, because they're going to use it in order to cure or something like that. So they say, my benayho, so what's the difference between the two statements attributed to Rabbi Yochanan? So he says, ikar benayho gav hayad to gav haregel. The difference is, you have to see something over here. Maka means literally a blow. Okay? A blow. He called a hakos and so on. It means, to hit somebody, okay? So it's a blow. But there's a difference between a maka, which you have inside, internally in your body, and one which is external. External, it wouldn't be so gefährlich because, you know, it's easy enough to see, you know, what to do in order to heal, let's say, if you get a sore or you get a wound or something like that, you know, that's easy to see. But as far as something internal is concerned, then the rule is you are permitted to mechallel Shabbos in order to cure it. But why Rabbi Yochanan is afraid of having a doctor, you know, who's not a Jew, to try to heal you is obviously because he's suspicious of what their motives may be and, you know, how they will treat you. But for us, as a general rule, whatever is considered a danger to life, or even a possibility of danger to life, for that we are permitted to be mechallel Shabbos. But if there's no danger whatever involved, then in that particular case, we're not permitted, you know, to be mechallel Shabbos in order to be cured. You wait till after Shabbos itself. Which poses problems, I don't have to tell you.
And right now they're still talking about, they still said you should see a Jewish doctor.
They would still, right,
yeah.
Right. Right.
Actually, there are things that are external that could be life-threatening. For example, if you've got a serious burn over,
right,
you know, a large percent of your body, that's external.
Right.
But it could,
right,
you know, medical science will tell you that,
yeah,
a burn victim would need immediate,
right,
care. So it's hard to say just surface versus,
right,
inside,
right,
that's kind of a...
Yeah, this is correct, because take a look at the next line over here. Yeah, I mean, they don't mention that, but this is what they have to say. So, see, he said that the Gav HaYad, in other words, the back of the hand, and the Gav HaRegel, the back of the foot, he says, right? What is the implication? The implication is that, you know, it might be dangerous. And they quote the Omer of Adar Bar Matna, who said, Omer Rav, the name of Rav, that Gav HaYad, the Gav HaRegel, in other words, the back of the hand or the back of the foot, the leg, HaRei Hen Kemaka Shel Chalal. All right, so in other words, they are just a dangerous category as an internal marker, right? Umechalan Alehin and Tashabas, and for these, you are permitted. You need to profane Shabbos in order to be able to cure it. Okay?
Chafes.
Yeah.
What?
Chafes.
We have
Chafes.
We got the wrong
name. We're on Chafes right now.
Yeah. we're getting very confused because neither of us can find the place.
Here we are. Okay.
not a word there.
No, I couldn't find a single, I couldn't find it at all. And I thought, well, I don't want to show how dumb I am.
By the way,
so Goldie come up with the
right,
same problem, so
yeah.
I figured we would. Now,
Sylvia.
Okay, so now where are we?
Yeah. Sylvia, you heard that Josh Buchwald passed away.
Goldie
yeah,
told.
Yeah, of course, Ann told Goldie anyway. Josh Buchwald, I don't know if you remember him. They lived
welcome
many years ago in the community, and then they made all the out to Israel. In Jerusalem. They've been living in Jerusalem for many years. But my daughter called to tell us that she went to Lubayim, right? Okay, so this is how about it stands right now. In other words, if things are that dangerous, then in that case you're permitted to violate Shabbos. This is the point that we're trying to make over here. But the auxiliary point is simply that don't go to a Goyish doctor in that case. Better off with a Jewish doctor who can help you with these things.
Or even what appears to be surface like an infection,
right,
can become dangerous.
Right, absolutely.
It
or as Beverly gave the example, I mean, you get a bird.
That's just a little.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
Connecticut?
No. Okay.
We're going to get to whether one can assess the severity of things by doing things like taking temperature.
will have some ideas that they had about medicine in their own day, but they don't mention it specifically at this particular point. Okay. But at this particular point right now, they begin to talk about different medical problems that you may have and what could be done in order to remedy. Okay.
So where are we on this paper? How far?
Okay. We are now at the end of line 5. Okay. Omarab Sutra. Rab Sutra said, Vajutra Bhattubhya. That's his name. Okay. Of course, there are other Vajutras too. So Rab Sutra, the son of Tubhya, said, Omarab, he said the name of Rab, he says, Kol Mako Tzaricha Omen, Nachalazan Tashamas. If you have a maka, again, a wound or a medical problem where you're not sure whether it would be dangerous or not, then in that particular case, you go to the more lenient view of saying, you know, that it requires a medical attention on Shabbos.
In other words,
you
say how.
Right.
Right. Yeah, you're suggesting if it's a question.
In reality, a Jew is expected to consult with his rabbi, you know, and I'll tell him also what the doctor had to say, and so on. I mean, like, for example, fasting on Yom Kippur. That, you know, if you're not able to fast on Yom Kippur, but you're supposed to either be told by a doctor, you know, or in any case you have to go to the rabbi, and the rabbi will decide, you know, whether it's a dangerous condition or not. And he says that you must not fast, in that case you don't fast on your kippah. It doesn't mean that you sit down to eat a steak dinner on your kippah, but, you know, to take medication.
In current practice,
so
people
right.
don't do that, though. Do they want people
know? People do. If they are very sensitive about these things, then they do. There's no question about it. In many cases, people simply become their own rabbis. They have their own Shulchan Aruch, you know. Logically, you can take, let's say, a certain amount of water in your mouth. You know, because of illness or something like that, and that would not be considered a violation of your kippur. Although normally you're not supposed to have anything, but, you know, for a sick person, there's a certain one, and then you wait a certain period of time, and then you take another little sip or something like that. So, for this, really, you have to consult a rabbi who will tell you what to do.
Isn't that about the size of an egg or something, and then you wait in another egg?
Well, essentially, I mean, as much as you can hold it, let's say, the one side of the mouth or something like that. Yeah.
It's a temporary,
right. Yeah, well, this is the basic idea that we had over there. I mean, that Rachaiba had the Torah was given to us that we should live by it, not to die by it. Omar Rav Shemin, Rav Shemin, Bar Abo, the son of Abo, Omar Rav Yochanan, again he quotes Rabbi Yochanan, he says, I ishta tzavirto kebakash of Allah. If you have a burning fever, then it's as bad as one of these tabaka shafalas we said. In other words, you know, a maka inside your body, and you are permitted to machal shabbos before it. Okay.
In order to say that you have a burning fever, aren't you making an assessment with them?
Yeah, well, I mean, people will, for example, I mean, even without the thermometer, you know, you can feel tremendous heat. particularly if you know a person, you know what the normal feeling would be as compared to suffering from a fever.
Mothers know when their children are have temperature. Yeah.
So, I'm not trying to imply that this is the latest medical events, but they were very observant of illness and how to treat it, and some of the remedies, you know, today you see out of place or something like that, but nevertheless, for their time, they were quite advanced. There's no question that they were quite familiar with the anatomy, the human anatomy, animal anatomy, and so on. I mean, because the very fact that, let's say, slaughtering an animal, you have to know this part of the animal, that part of the animal, and so on and so forth. And they knew animal anatomy very well, but by the same token, they also studied human anatomy too. So, in many cases, we can sort of understand, you know, the remedy that is mentioned in the Gemara. It's mentioned over here, they have also in the Gemara in Brochus, the last chapter, they also have some patients devoted to medical problems and so on. Based upon the fact that, they were able to observe. Nevertheless, at the same time, we have to realize that there is specifically a commandment that is in one of the activities related to Shabbos, which would be a violation. Now, let me explain that. We'll come to it in a couple of lines, that particular problem. Okay? So far, let's continue right now, because they asked the following question now. Eichon Macha Shachala. Where is a Makkah Shel Challah? Where does it start from? In other words, what area within the human body can we say it comes from the interior? You understand? That's what they mean by the Makkah Shel Challah. A Makkah that occurs in the interior of the body. Okay? So, Perish Rabbi Abi. He explained that means anything that affects you, min ha-sofa v'lifnim. In other words, anything from the lip and inside, this is already an internal mark.